Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Still racking my brain trying to figure out who could be John Scott-esque.
The text line has some opinions on that, Justin.
It's too good of a league now.
There will always be the John Scott
fewer butchers,
personality.
More overs being hit. Lots of goals. Lots of talent. No room.
Hat tricks every night.
No room.
You get a hat trick. You get a hat trick.
The big guys with the wingspan, they're scorers now. Like Tage Thompson. They're not using those arms to throw punches. To talk about that more. Well, maybe not that. Got Mike Kelly, NHL Network analyst and analytics expert. We've been driving the bus here, or starting to drive. Starting the motor, at least.
Yeah, we've turned the key in the ignition.
Trying to make sure that our guy, William Nylander, goes to the All-Star game. Justice for Willie, we're calling it. So, to get, you know, maybe more evidence that he belongs there, that he deserves to go to the All-Star game, deserves to step out of the shadow of Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner, is there enough data indicating that this is a very special career-best season for William Nylander?
Yeah, William Nylander's having a great year. And yeah, that's the tough thing is you can only send so many people from one team, right? And there's a lot of people having great years for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So that's a tough one. William Nylander has always kind of had, you know, really positive underlying numbers in, you know, puck moving and, you know, being elusive and beating guys one-on-one. Things that tend to generally lead to scoring points ultimately. And he's really put it all together this season. I think his play away from the puck has been better this year as well, which, you know, oftentimes helps you regain possession for your team also and lead to more offensive opportunities. So he's having a really terrific year, and I don't know if it's going to end up going or not, but you look at the past couple of years and, I've always thought that he probably doesn't get enough credit for, you know, going to the front of the net and being in those contested areas, which he does. He's having a great year.
Yeah, in all likelihood, if he does receive the honor, it'll come at the expense of either Auston Matthews, which seems less likely, or Mitch Marner, again, seems kind of unlikely as well. So he's in a difficult spot. That was the roadblock, and that's, I guess, the reality that he has to deal with as long as he wants to play in the core four. Auston Matthews has been an interesting case study this season. Earlier on in the year, when the goals were really hard to come by, you're running analysis and trying to dig deeper and figure out if he's lesser than this year when compared to last, because the goal scoring and the actual raw totals don't tell the whole story. I'm wondering, you know, I guess we came to the conclusion, he's still generating chances, just a little bit of puck luck or the opposite of puck luck this year, and that he would turn around, and he is turning around, but I wonder how his season has evolved from a more analytical standpoint.
Yeah, when he was kind of going through, like, it's funny, and you stay with a bit of an asterisk, that goal-scoring slump of his, just compared to what we've seen him do in the past, kind of small things. Like, he was not producing shots from close to the net at the same rate that he had in the past. And, you know, even for a guy like Auston Matthews, where I think if you're a fan, you're thinking, yeah, he's got that great shot, and you're thinking about that wrist shot from, you know, 30 feet out that he can score on frequently because it's so good. He still does score a lot of goals, like most guys, from, you know, the net front area. And whether that's rebounds or even deflections, which he's gotten quite good at, he wasn't getting those as many of those looks as he had in the past. And, you know, he got closer to the net and he started to score a little bit more. That was part of it then. And the other thing too, I think, is that there, you know, he scored 60 goals last year, and scoring 60 goals doesn't make you a 60 goal scorer necessarily. There really isn't anybody in the league who's a 60 goal year in and year out scorer. So seeing some regression in that sense isn't shocking. But he's another one of those guys that, again, he can rip off 12 goals in 10 games and then you're not really talking about it as much anymore, right?
That's right. The primary experiment, I guess, that's being actively conducted with the Toronto Maple Leafs right now is the five forward power play. Where do you stand on the five forward power play? The benefits, do they outweigh the risks? I guess we've seen a little bit of the, you know, not the bad side, but the dangers with Brandon Saad beating Mitch Marner one-on-one and getting one through Ilya Samsonov. But I guess what I'm really curious about is the importance or the perceived importance of the defensive skill set on a power play. Like, it's not about, you know, stopping or preventing a one-on-one, but does the defenseman still add value in that they do things that forwards don't do offensively, whether it's walking the line or changing the angle? Do you feel like the Leafs are missing out on some of that defensive acumen, in air quotes, with the five forward power play?
I don't, but I think the way that you just phrased that is important because I think it's situational. I don't think it's it used to be almost exclusively, really, three forwards, two defensemen, and now it's almost exclusively four forwards and one defenseman. I don't think we're going to get to a point where it's exclusively five forwards, but I think situationally it does make sense. And with the Maple Leafs, I can see why it makes sense, because Mitch Marner is one of the best defensive wingers in the NHL. He's really, really good in a lot of defensive areas. So I think it's a good point you bring up about certain skill sets that, you know, many defensemen who would play on a power play have, walking the line, like you talk about, obviously defending. Even passing to a certain degree, there's going to be a defenseman on a team who's just a better offensive option than whoever your fifth forward might be. So there's no reason to take him off because he's a defenseman. That's why I think situationally it's important to look at. And overall, I did a segment on this on the NHL Network last year when Florida started doing this, when they got Claude Giroux at the trade deadline and Ekblad was injured. Montreal was tinkering with it as well. And the Canadians are still tinkering with it. And that was kind of my whole point, was I don't think that the perceived negatives defensively are so strong that teams shouldn't look at it, but it doesn't make sense for every team to do it. So if you're in a spot like Toronto where Morgan Rielly goes down and I know he's back now, but you think, hey, this is something that might work for us. Absolutely. And, you know, that the defensive side of it, the shorthanded goal against was Saad against Marner. Quite frankly, if Ilya Samsonov makes that save, we're not even talking about it. So, and Marner made a couple of nice plays, right? He broke up a 2-on-1 later on in the game, shorthanded. So, I like the teams are experimenting with it.
Mike, on Tuesday night's Leafs broadcast, you did a great breakdown on Pontus Holmberg and his impact on the Leafs' fourth line. I think he's quickly become a bright spot in the bottom six, bolstering their lineup a little bit there that had been suffering a bit throughout the start of the season. What is it analytically? I know the eye test has proven one thing, but what are you seeing in the numbers that's really helped him have this emergence for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, he's been a nice surprise, eh? And I think with your fourth line, if you can get on a team like Toronto where your top two lines are so good offensively, if you can get a fourth line that can just keep the puck out of the net, number one, you're not relying on them for offense necessarily, although it's nice, but keep the puck out of the net and then set your top lines up for offensive zone starts and being in good spots offensively, that's perfect. That's all you're asking for. And he's helped them do that. He's been really good. You know, talk about analytics. What I was talking about on the segment is, you know, when he's on the ice, there are so few cycle chances against the Maple Leafs. There are so few high danger shots in the inner slot area. He's top 15 among all forwards in the NHL in limiting those at a per 20 minute rate. And, I watch video on him and you just see a ton of hustle. You see a guy who's always in the right spot defensively, not chasing behind the net, stopping up in front of the net to take plays away. You know, doing a lot of those little things that hockey players, that teammates notice. And it's why he's, you know, gotten a lot of praise from his coach and his teammates. They're, you know, those little tiny plays that don't make highlight reels, but help change possession, help you start in the offensive zone. They had a shift in the last game in the third period where they were just having a great shift in the offensive zone, 30, 35 seconds probably. And the line they're out there against, they can't do anything. By the time they get the puck out, they're going and changing. So, yeah, I think he's been a great player for them.
Yeah, his emergence really has been key because there was a hole in the bottom six until Pontus Holberg came up and filled it admirably. I will say, though, I think a more reasonable hierarchy has settled with the Maple Leafs, at least down the middle, with David Kampf being elevated from the fourth line and playing on the third line. The Kampf impact, how strong is it? I've been driving the bus.
Justin's obsessed with Kampf.
I'm the biggest David Kampf fan in the world, and it might be for the same reasons that people appreciate Pontus Holmberg, but I see a third line functioning at a high level all of a sudden, and I can't help but think this is all to do because of David Kampf.
Yeah, he's a good player, and he's another one of those guys that has, you know, strong defensive impact numbers, right, where there's not a lot that typically happens against you when he's on the ice. So he's, you know, I'll be interested to see what he could do in a third line center role long term. I'm not convinced that I guess it depends. Like, how much offense do you really need from him in that role when you've got the top two lines that you have there? Like, you can look at other teams and their third line centers that might produce a little bit more. Maybe all you need is a good, you know, good shutdown type performance from a line like that, I guess, but a little bit of offense. But I'm a fan of him. I think that was a really good pickup when they got him. And if you're looking at, you know, your top two lines, and then you're looking at Kampf and Holmberg centering, you know, playing the way they are centering your bottom two lines, that's a pretty good situation to be in.
All right, when we look at the playoff picture and some of the best teams in this conference, obviously Boston has been prolific to start this season. They just never lose on home ice. And I think numerically and analytically, it's a good reference point for what the big difference is between Boston and Toronto and maybe where Tampa fits in that equation. Has it just been, you know, strength of schedule? Has it just been good luck and having the band back together that's kept the vibes going in Boston? Is there something you're seeing that can actually tangibly give us a perspective between Boston and Toronto?
Well, Boston's good all around. Like, I don't see holes in that lineup. It's impressive. And, you know, when they started the season and Marchand was out and Grizzlick was out, McAvoy, and I think, you know, a lot of people thought, can this team keep its head above water long enough to make the playoffs even? And, you know, I obviously had no idea they were going to get off to the start that they did, but they are such a good team in terms of, you know, the how they play within their system and how responsible they are. And they've had guys there that have been playing this way forever, right? So missing a couple of guys, it's not going to break that team down. And, you know, offensively, like, they're first in expected goals, they're second in goals. And defensively, they're second in expected goals against and first in goals against. So it doesn't get better than that. Mm-hmm. And the thing that Jim Montgomery's done this season is, you know, he's encouraged his defense to be more active in the rush, get up the ice, be more active in the offensive zone. That's opened things up a little bit offensively for this team, but it hasn't taken away from what they do defensively. And then Linus Allmark's been outstanding. So that to me is the most complete team. They don't have a lot of holes to speak of.
I'm curious about your take on Linus Allmark. Been outstanding, undoubtedly. But is he a product of the system, or is he help raising the system? He's the runaway favorite right now in the Vezina Trophy race, if you're looking at the odds board. But this guy was sort of not plucked out of obscurity, but it was seen as a gamble when Boston went in on him, took him on free agency from the Buffalo Sabres. In the goaltender lexicon, where do you think he ranks? Does he deserve to be that heavy favorite? Is it all on him, or is this just being a part of the Boston Bruins?
He's not a byproduct of the Bruins. He's obviously helped by the fact that, like I said, that, you know, you look at expected goals against, so that's what a goalie is facing in terms of shot quality and quantity, that the Boston is elite. But in Buffalo, and this is where, again, you cannot go on goals against average and save percentage to really get the best idea possible of a goalie. because neither one of those things factors in shot quality, which is huge. So in Buffalo, he's playing on a team at the time that was giving up a ton of chances and was not good defensively at all. And he put up, you know, pretty good numbers, like 915, 917 save percentages. That's not bad at all. It's even more impressive considering what he was facing. So he was a goalie then that, you know, you look at things like goals saved above expected and some more advanced measures that he was, you know, looking pretty good in. So when he went to Boston, it's like, all right, well, you got a goalie here who's actually better than his traditional stats would suggest, going on a team that's, you know, offensively and defensively one of the best in the league. So this should work out pretty darn well, and it has. And sometimes you see goalies go from teams like a Boston or a Colorado, like Philip Grubauer, and go to teams that are weaker defensively. And people are like, oh, well, what happened to this goalie? So, well, maybe the goalie was okay, not great, and now they're not being propped up by that defensive team anymore.
Yep, never trust a goaltender leaving Colorado or Carolina. That's at least my rule. Connor McDavid's season is, you know, it speaks for itself. Triple crown leader, if you want to go that route, leading in goals, assists, and, of course, points. But I wonder if there's something that, you know, the trained eye is seeing that's helping Connor McDavid's season reach all-timer status.
Yeah, he's scoring at a higher rate in terms of goals. It's funny. It's you know, underneath he, things that he does so well, right? You know, controlled entries and rush chances and looking for things that would be like, oh yeah, that's why he's scoring all these goals now. There's not really. It's not like there's like, oh yeah, that's what he's doing this year, and that's why he's got 33 goals in 39 games. He's obviously got the ability to do it. He can kind of do whatever he wants, it seems like. But, you know, I think last year at this point, he was averaging even more scoring chances off the rush, which is kind of his bread and butter. So he's having an incredible year, as he always does. Whether he worked on certain things that have just made him more efficient in terms of goal scoring on scoring on chances, that's a possibility for sure. There's not really one thing off the top of my head that I could point to and say, yeah, that's a metric where, you know, it's really jumped off the page in terms of goal scoring this season. But it's crazy watching this guy. Like, we're watching him the other night against Seattle when he got the puck in the neutral zone. And it's like the second he touched it, you know exactly what's going to happen. It's like I said, the play's already over when he gets the puck in the neutral zone. It's insane.
Someone right behind him in the Rocket Richard Trophy race is Tage Thompson, having as well an incredible season. It's been a delight to watch him. Another hat trick the other night, going head to head with Ovi. It's just been, I think, really surprising and great for the Buffalo Sabres as well, who are looking for a bright spot. What have you liked about his season? And is there something that we're not seeing when we watch, you know, him put the puck in the net that's making this so easy for him? It seems.
It does look easy, doesn't it?
Must be nice.
I say that about him all the time. I was saying that the other night on the desk. I'm like, yeah, must be nice to have all the skill set that he has. Like, he's got the hands of like Johnny Gaudreau in the body of a guy who's 6'7". So, I've seen some data, just like shot speed related data, and he's got the hardest shot in the NHL. There's nobody that shoots it harder. There's nobody that shoots it as hard as often as he does. And you mix that in with the fact that he also has great hands. Like the assist that he had on the first goal for Buffalo the other night, a backhand pass off the rush. How many times have we seen him in tight, just kind of using that like condor-like reach to go back and forth and back and forth? He can wire a snapshot 90 miles an hour. He can take a slap shot over 100 miles an hour, and he's kind of put it all together, and it's made him unstoppable in a way, right? And like I've said it before, and it's a big thing to say, and it's not like I'm saying he is Mario Lemieux, but it's Mario Lemieux-like tendencies when you watch some of the things he does offensively, because there's no one in the league today that has his particular skill set. And when you look at the size and the hands and the reach and the ability with those hands, like that's where my mind goes, which is a crazy thing to say.
We got to see another great head-to-head last night, Connor Bedard and Logan Cooley, and you had a great segment on that as well with the numbers. And maybe we had Logan Cooley flying under the radar a bit because we're in the Canadian bubble up here, but the comparison between those two and what they've done at the World Junior Championship so far is a little closer than maybe some people had expected. Is there a statistical or analytical insight that this could be a sustainable level of performance, or could be something that in the NHL could actually, you know, replicate itself with these players and in their young career so far?
Yeah, the World Junior, I'm always careful with that. The World Junior Tournament's a short one, right?
Yeah.
So not to read too much into it, but you're right. Like, Logan Cooley, to me, has been the second most dynamic forward in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, Connor Bedard is, if it's a 100-meter dash, he's, you know, already across the finish line and everyone else is halfway there. it's insane how much better he's been than everybody in this tournament. Like, I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. But yeah, Logan Cooley, I think because Bedard is still on the show, we kind of forgot in a way about everyone else. And you're right, in Canada, you focus so much on the Canadian team that can happen. But yeah, I've been really impressed with Logan Cooley. And, you know, there's things that you can't, I don't even know the best way to put this. So, like, in a hockey game, anyone can score a goal, really, right? Pretty much anyone can score a couple goals in any given game. There's certain stats that you can't just, in a game, one guy is like, yep, I'm going to have 11 controlled zone entries in this game. Like, it just doesn't happen unless you're an elite skater and puck mover and player. And zone entry is one of those things, you know, being able to take the puck into the offensive zone with possession, setting up teammates for chances, creating them yourself, that he's been pretty darn close to Bedard in the tournament in terms of volume, like right bumping up right, you know, below him. So that's been impressive to watch. His playmaking skills have been really, really good. And again, none of it to Bedard's level, but he's the next guy on the list in a lot of these key areas in terms of, you know, generating offense and being a dynamic forward. And we saw him score a goal, the first goal of the game last night. So, yeah, it's been fun watching him. He to me is, and you can make a case maybe for a couple other guys to be in the mix, but for me, I'd put him as the second best forward in the tournament to Bedard right now.
Mike, the NHL trade deadline is not rapidly approaching, but it's approaching. I think we're 2 months away now, and I think a lot of the important discussions are underway with potential trade chips. And we've kind of known these names for a while, even though there hasn't been any movement. Taves, Kane, Horvat, O'Reilly. When you look at the, you know, the more common trade lists that are out there, which potential in-season addition do you think can be most impactful when gauging playoff success?
Well, Bo Horvat, I mean, Jonathan Taves has had a really good year, right? So in a tough situation in Chicago, and just imagine getting Jonathan Taves at the trade deadline. Bo Horvat to me is really interesting. And, you know, I think about what a great fit he could be potentially in a place like Boston. Imagine the Bruins, they get Bo Horvat.
Terrifying.
And not even just for the short term, you know, with how good they are already, but we don't know what's going to happen with David Krejci beyond, you know, this year and Patrice Bergeron's towards the end of his career. You get Bo Horvat over there, sign him long term. You're not missing a beat. Like, that's a great spot to be in. That could be good. Like, Patrick Kane, I know he's had a tough year. You look at, like, goals, obviously, compared to what he can do. It's hard to, you know, put in too much stock into what's going on in Chicago right now, because we know what is going on. They're completely rebuilding that team. Patrick Kane, if you look at the last few years, is still one of the better offensive players in the league. So you're not getting, you know, a veteran who's one who you're hoping can contribute. You're getting a star player if he decides to go somewhere. You know, people talk about the Rangers, maybe an interesting fit there. What about the Devils could be an interesting fit for Patrick Kane. So whoever gets him, if he decides to go, is getting a star player still. But yeah, there's a lot of big names, like more than in recent memory, of guys who could potentially be moved at the deadline. And you think about a real legit cup contender, like, I don't think there's that many teams. My short list for, like, the true cup contenders this year isn't that many teams. And if one of those teams, two of them, three, whatever,
adds players like this, that could give them a pretty significant advantage.
Yeah, it seems like there's as many cup contenders as there are potential trade chips existing, and that would make at least the top end really, really interesting come playoff time. And I will say, I've always hoped Patrick Kane gets moved. I want to see him involved in meaningful games, but he almost needs it for his career right now. He's languishing there with a bad team. If he stays there, like, I feel like the final chapter of his career, the final chapters of his career won't be what they could be if he was playing on a more competitive team. So hopefully he goes, and hopefully there's fireworks ahead of the deadline. This was fun, Mike. Hopefully we can do this again soon. Everyone check out Mike's work at the NHL Network. Thanks again for jumping on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and enjoy the rest of the day.
That was Mike Kelly, of course, at the NHL Network.
Oh, some we will enjoy there. The rest of the day. 7:30 p.m. We got a split screen, though, with the Maple Leafs at 7. So.
Oh, it's a 7:30 start tonight.
It is.
Will they push it back for some reason? Or is it just going to prime time?
It might be prime time.
Mm. I was going to say, maybe they pushed it back to get the ice settled.
They should do that.
Every minute counts.
They should push it back for the ice because it looked pretty bad. But what can you do?
I mean, what was the justification for having the relegation games in Halifax?
Didn't need to happen.
When it was a two-city thing anyway, like, I get, you know, maybe you're making a day of it if you're in Halifax, see all three games, but I don't know. Use the rinks you got.
Yeah, no, we might have some wake and rake suggestions from today's World Junior Gold Medal game. We definitely have some for the Toronto Maple Leafs as well, at home against the Seattle Kraken. You know where you're going with this?
I do.
Oh.
I'm going gut instinct.
That's how we do it yesterday.
I'm 2023, gut.
Okay. Well, let's take a break, and we're going to do the Wake and Rake next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
All right, it's Fan Morning Show. It's Baby Friday. We won you a little bit of money last night with our World Juniors parlay, which hit. Connor Bedard got that goal in the...
It was a wrap after that goal.
And I thought, here we go. And you're... Your Chechia barely squeaked through there.
I mean, I'm not expecting dominance out of the plus 700 dogs tonight.
Yeah, but yesterday they were heavy faves.
They got Team of Destiny. Heavy. Team of Destiny vibes.
You think, eh?
Yeah, maybe they're fading a little bit. Maybe they've been figured out.
So you have a future what's plus 700?
Plus 750. And I can't even really make money off it. I'll bet everything that I could win on... Canada tonight. And cheer for them and double my initial stake, maybe. Turn that plus 700 into a plus 200 or plus 100.
Okay. So they're plus 335 on the money line to win gold tonight against Canada, minus 420 for them. Over under set at 6.5. Obviously, you got your goal scores. You could parlay into a little World Juniors action.
Maybe a little Fantilli tonight.
Yeah, he's
got off the schneid last night. Someone in our text line cashed on Fantilli. I wasn't willing to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he's maybe this is as much of a vibes team as all the others we've been discussing this year, Maple Leafs in particular.
They've got the USA Sweden bronze medal game at 2:30. So I read the IIHF schedule, which is in Halifax time. So it is a 6:30 p.m. start.
Okay.
But when you go on the Halifax or the IIHF schedule, it's written.
They're putting in Eastern times?
In whatever the East Coast is.
They're putting it on the local time. That makes sense.
The local time. Yes. So my error, 6:30 p.m. So you get a little bit of staggered. Anyway, it's the same.
It's nice. We start all sporting events at 6:30.
Okay, well, that's nice for the Fan Morning Show as we get to bed a little earlier. So USA Sweden for bronze at 2:30, Canada and Czechia at 6:30 p.m.
What's the line on Sweden, USA?
USA
handy?
Minus 265.
You think they'll take their ball and go home?
I think USA is going to come out and have a dynamite game.
Oh, I was thinking the other way. I think they might be a little...
They're embarrassed. They're mad.
Might be
their
feelings a little bit.
They feel slighted by the refs.
Run into a real diligent team like Sweden?
No.
Although Sweden has that experience, too, where they Like, they now lose, like, prior to the knockout round, which is something they hadn't done for, like, a decade. They had that ridiculous record where they never faced defeat until getting to the point where they needed to win in order to medal. But, like, time and time again, they have good showings and they don't win gold.
And they had really a heartbreaker.
Every year, year after year, and a heartbreaker to Czechia. So maybe both these teams are in positions where they're like, maybe it'll take a little while to get going. Not that it matters for over under, I don't think. But I feel like in another one of these teams, I think it's possible just is not feeling it today. And maybe it plays out that way.
Well, it's 2:30 p.m. You can have a little afternoon viewing before you get into the gold medal and the Toronto Maple Leafs at home against the Seattle Kraken. Let's start with your submissions for the Wake and Rake. You said you had yours all lined up with a gut feel.
Yeah, first thing I saw, there's an over-under set between the Arizona Coyotes and Philadelphia Flyers at 6, not 6.5. Nor I would say 6.5 is pretty much the standard. Maybe 6 is you know, maybe more common than I'm giving it credit for. But when I looked at that, when I saw the 6, when I saw those two teams, I was thinking, I've seen a lot of high scores between those two teams lately. And when the eye test or the initial gut feel matches what's actually true, I feel pretty confident with taking the over at minus 115. Arizona's last 7, we'll say 8 games, 8 goals, 8 goals, 9 goals, 9 goals, 3 goals, 7 goals, 5 goals, 7 goals. More often than not, they're hitting the over. And the Flyers in their last 8 games, 5, 6, 7, 11, 7, 8, 9, and 3. A lot of those games between those two teams have recently gone over 6. So I'll go to the over 6. They keep scoring. They keep playing shoddy defensively. And we'll see if Philly and Arizona can combine to hit an over today.
All right. So I'm putting that in the Wake and Rake, over 6 in Coyotes and Flyers. Mine comes from the NBA. I'm trying to get back on the winning streak there. The game that I have circled.
What happened to Brooklyn yesterday, by the way?
They lost. Thanks.
Do you know, like,
Kyrie still put up 44 points, which is nice. So
what happened there?
What's I don't know. On? Okay. So let's not talk about it. It's their first loss in a long time. It happens. Okay.
You've been off for 2 weeks.
Celtics and Mavericks is the game for me in the NBA tonight.
You're always circling the Celtics.
Why would you not be?
I don't know.
So Boston just dropped a 150-117 decision at OKC without Shea. Jason Tatum ranks 5th in the NBA scoring at 30.8 points per game. And on the other side of the court, ever heard of him? Luka Doncic? He's leading the league in scoring. He's putting up incredible numbers as of late. So I'm hitting over in this game.
So top 2 on the MVP odds board,
so
I believe,
would you not be
right
circling
now
this game?
See, this is what I'm always fighting. My initial read for the Celtics is under. This is the team that plays well defensively. And yet, as you mentioned, you were right. 150 put up by the Shea-less Thunder. Maybe they're going through it right now. And you don't want to be going through it
against Luka
when one Luka Doncic is in town, or at least you're in town in Dallas. So, yeah, I'm not going to argue with you because you've been right about the Celtics being less of a defensive juggernaut than previous seasons.
So it's at 2:30. I'm going to hit the over for that for the Wake and Rake. And I'm going to place that in our parlay. And let's go through some anchor submissions, okay?
So we haven't really touched a relevant game, whether it's the Juniors or the Leafs. So,
that's,
you know, we're going to get other ones. But I think if it's a traditional anchor, we probably have to go with one of those two games.
Okay, so let's start with Adam the Truck, who you owe some praise to.
I gratitude in the first hour. I hope he heard it. I played that Devil's parlay that he set out for me, and we had a good night.
All right. Good morning, Rakers. I am 7-for-9 on my power play point submissions. I'll stay on the heater and offer a few more gems. Michael Bunting is at +265 for a power play point, and Marcus Johansson of the Capitals at +350. I was also looking for Bunting shots, but it looks like the books has figured out that he shoots a lot. So if you want something a little lighter on the risk scale, I'll be on Bunting for an assist at +155. Good luck and go Canada, go.
Yeah, I don't mind sprinkling on Michael Bunting right now. The best Leaf line by far right now is the Bunting Nylander Matthews
and
unit.
And his last one was Bunting on the power play as well.
Yes,
that hit.
Yeah.
That's in the last game.
The Tavares line is not exactly clicking right now. So if you expect the Leafs to score, I think that top line probably should be earmarked to provide it.
Any insight on the Capitals?
I'm just shocked Marcus Johansson's playing on power plays at this stage.
Well,
especially for the Washington Capitals. They've been dealing with a lot of injuries, though.
All right, so Bunting catching our eye on that one. So Rhonda Markham says, good morning. Julius Randle did not let me down again yesterday. He is 11 for 13 over rebounds. For today's anchor pick, I'm going to rely on Justin's soccer expertise to back me up on this one. Holland to score an anytime goal. This is outrageous. Versus his beloved Chelsea. He's good for at least
one. You know me, Ronnie. Listen, I love it.
He's good for at least one goal a game. And if this game opens up like I think it will, he could get multiple goals. Juliana apologizes for her Warriors performance last night as her team got beat by the lowly Pistons on this last second three. It's all right, Juliana. She was hoping for overtime where the Warriors might have covered the spread. Today, she is writing Team Canada said to play Connor Bedard anytime point. The odds were not up yet, but whatever it is, she says it's a lock. Good luck to Canada and all to your fellow Rakers today.
Yeah, I agree. It probably is a lock, and I think the odds were reflected. It's probably going to be
I had it up for a second, and it was,
I'm not really sure.
It was not playable, but
I will
say,
Holland is probably the best striker in world football. Chelsea's Chelsea. They're going to have give you an honest effort more often than not, unless they're trying to play for a new manager, which they seem to do every other year. I could definitely see that being a decent bet at minus 125. However, are we anchoring Chelsea, Man U, or Man City?
I don't think probably so. Not. Sorry. Connor Bedard, anytime point, is minus 670.
I'll play it, though, Ron, for Markham, because you're paying attention.
Minus 670.
Miss 670?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Eric from Burlington.
Can you play the opposite of that?
Yeah, plus 380 for no points.
I'm not doing that.
That's rude. Good morning. It's Eric from Burlington. My apologies for the poorly worded text yesterday. I guess my fingers were moving faster than my brain could keep up. Glad the team could pick me up and understand what I was trying to say. Today, I'm resorting to good old copy and paste. It has been proofread multiple times. If this text fails,
okay,
I'm retiring.
Okay.
For my pick today, I'm sad there's no Thursday night football, so I must resort to hockey. I like the Rangers tonight, -1.5 over Montreal. The Rangers looked really good in their last game, and Montreal has lost 6 in a row and 5 straight by 2 or more goals. You'll love to see it. Also, I don't know if this counts, but you guys like Leafs revenge games? Tonight is Canada's revenge game. If yesterday's Chechia show up, this game could get ugly. Canada feels like a lock tonight. Shout out to Milic on an amazing performance last night. That was fun to watch.
And Montreal's getting embarrassed lately.
Ooh.
It's
wasn't it 9-2 the other
really
day against
ugly.
The Caps?
Multi-goal losses, including 9-2 against the Caps over the last, I guess, since the holiday break to the Lightning. Not so bad. Panthers, 7-2, not great. Capitals, 9-2. And on Tuesday, the Predators beat them 6-3. Like, they are looking leaky.
Well, that could be a submission. We're trying to, like, pick something from our circle, but thanks for texting that in. Tyler from Peterborough. Going back to the money well, Connor Bedard, it has been a lock all tournament long. Connor Bedard, 2 points tonight in the gold medal game.
Yeah, if we're riding Bedard, it has to be at least two based on, what was it, 670? This 2 points might not be in range, to be honest.
I can tell you 2 points for Connor Bedard is minus 117.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. Okay, Matt in Toronto. Almost hit a 12-game parlay last night. Was only 5 games off. Always bet on yourself, Fred VanVleet. Take the over in the Leafs game, Matt in Toronto.
Is it 6.5,
yep,
I assume? Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning Bedard over that.
Okay. I have Chechia at plus 1,200 to win. Also taking the Avs tonight.
Plus 1,200? Where'd you find that?
I mean, probably from, like, previous? Future.
Okay, he's on it before I was. Good for Matt.
Jeg and Scarborough. Doncic over points for me. Bet on the MVP. Now, we're already picking one from that game, but yeah. I like the same thought process. Okay. Good morning. It's Corey from Port Hope / Halifax here. Was happy to see that the World Juniors parlay hit last night. I'm going back to the Canada game for my Wake and Rake pick tonight. I'll take the over 6.5 in the gold medal game. It's simple. Over 6.5 has hit in every Canada game and has hit in every Chechia game except for when they play Sweden. And he's going to be there, I think, so must be nice.
Yeah, that might be it. I don't know if I like Bedard or that better. I could see this getting, like, out of control in Canada's favor. Mm-hmm. But if Chechia is in the game, if Chechia is doing what it needs to do to be competitive, this thing could, like, languish a little bit and be pretty low scoring. But again, that's associated with what Connor Bedard's going to be doing. So either way, you know.
If but it's one of those leave it all out on the ice games. Like if it's like at 3-1, you know, the Canada's going to be pushing all night to keep the puck going in the net. There's that home ice advantage. Like you saw yesterday, like it was outrageous how much energy that crowd gave Canada. Like I don't expect them to, you know, if it's
I could see it finishing 5-1 though, with Bedard getting 3 points.
Yeah. Okay. Question for futures, Justin, who's more of a lock? Olmark Vezina or Montgomery coach of the year? They're still plus 200 each.
Ooh, I wouldn't bet either of those right now because the value is lost in both of them. I'll put it this way. I'm trying to figure out a way to fade Olmark, and I'm not trying to figure out a way to fade Montgomery. However, I'm already in on Montgomery, so that might be like clouding my judgment. I do think, well, one's more subjective than the other. And right now, if everything stands as is, like if Olmark continues to be really, really good and really dominant, he's going to win. I guess you could make an argument for someone else versus Montgomery more effectively than you could with Olmark. But I just expect Olmark to fade more than the Bruins to fade, if that makes any sense. So I think Montgomery's probably closer to the lock.
Okay. Well, that's just the futures, Justin, looking in his crystal ball. Okay, so that was all our Wake and Rake submissions for today. Lots of them to go through, but let's pick something from either Canada or the Leafs, just to narrow it down.
I think we should ride Connor Bedard till the wheels come off.
I also feel like we should be giving Adam in the truck a little bit of appreciation for his nonstop power play point hits.
Okay.
So I'm either liking Michael Bunting to get a power play point or an assist. Canada, but
I would rather go an assist because we have to depend on power plays to actually materialize, to get him into situations where he can score. That assist can come at any time. It's still a plus number. I would rather go with the Bunting assist.
Okay, well, I think you should make
this decision. If he scores on the power play, we're going to be kicking ourselves, obviously. But you've chosen the Leafs, so I think you should put the anchor in place. And then we can think about, hey, are we playing a same game for Canada to win, plus the over, plus 2 points for Bedard,
and just do something like that? Let's do a separate one. I like to put Adam in the truck in our parlay today.
He deserves it.
Okay, so we're going to do a Michael Bunting assist straight up.
What's just any time point?
Any time point. Okay.
We can't change his pick.
It's minus 150 for an any time point.
Okay, do the assist.
Okay. I can't find that currently, so we're going to do just an any time point. But it's an assist in our mind, so I'm just going to put that in the parlay. Got it?
All right.
He didn't, like, I don't know if you can see it, but I can't see it where I'm looking at just what an assist is for Michael Bunting. I can see a point for him. Oh, he said it's plus 155, so I'll find something similar. Okay, so that's our Wake and Rake parlay today. We're going to have the over in the Celtics-Mavs game, which is set at 230, over 6 in the Coyotes and Flyers game, and Michael Bunting to get an assist tonight.
Choose your Bunting, whether it's power play.
No, it's assist.
Officially for it.
Yes, assist. We're doing an assist.
Yeah, but if you want to go aggressive,
well,
you like
said
the Bunting.
You like the assist more too, so.
Yeah, I like
it. You said it. Okay.
I like in that situation.
Okay.
Yes.
Altogether plus 708
that's a good one.
For today's Wake and Rake parlay.
And if we do a same game for Canada, Czechia, are you in agreement with Canada to win plus the over plus 2+ points for Connor Bedard?
Yeah. Let me quickly dial that in there.
The rationale behind that is pretty simple. Canada being a heavy favorite, Canada being a team that scores and hits over 6.5 every time they step onto the ice over there in Halifax. And of course, Connor Bedard is the most prolific scorer in World Juniors history for Canada. So if you put those two,
it's
three
not
picks
even
together,
good.
What is it?
Take a guess.
It's plus money, right?
It's plus money, barely.
+130.
Plus 230 for Canada to win.
That's good.
Over 6.5
and
Connor Bedard, 2 points.
All you really need is the points from, you're betting the points for Bedard, basically.
Yep.
If he's getting 2+, you can probably expect 7 goals in the game and Canada to win.
All right. So that's our double Wake and Rake parlay for you tonight. Adam in the truck has already sent a message of appreciation in for us. So. We're making one guy
right
happy.
Right back at you, bud.
All right, let's go. We got Maple Leafs in action against the Seattle Kraken today. It is the Geo revenge game, though. That did not pass me by, okay?
Okay.
I kind of sometimes forget that he played
It's the McCann revenge game too.
Okay, so keep an eye out on anything.
There's
Geo
the Kerfoot
McCann
narrative, you know, with the fish, and was it Kerfoot that was going all
along?
Oh,
I totally forgot about that too. Really?
Well, Dave Haxtell revenge game. Who's putting the money on the board today? Is this the biggest money? Forget the Wake and Rake. The biggest money making opportunity for either the Kraken or Maple Leafs tonight.
So Jared McCann.
Yeah.
Plus 215 to score. And I'm trying to see if the Geo
point
800 to score tonight.
800? How many goals does Geo?
I don't know, but you got to play it.
800.
You got to play it. All right, there's your revenge game tonight. I'm sure one of them will happen because that's the way it works with Maple Leafs. Whoever used to play for them puts the puck in the net.
Giordano has one goal in the season and he's plus 800.
Well, you know what?
I don't think the expected value on that bet is high, but we'll do it anyway.
All right, so gold medal game between Canada and Czechia at 6:30, not 7:30, 6:30 in your Eastern Standard Time, and Maple Leafs following that up at 7 p.m. That was it for the Fan Morning Show this morning. Have a happy baby Friday, and we'll be back tomorrow morning.